opening ceremonies of the Alcan Highway, which later became known as the Alaska Highway. The services were recorded on November the 22nd, 1942 at Soldier Summit, and the narration is by J. Frank Willis.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm speaking to you from an improvised control room in the rear of an American Army truck parked away up here on the Soldier's Summit, a high pass on the Canada-Alaska Highway, and where at this moment, some 100 yards from my vantage point, the official opening of this great road is taking place. In the belief that this occasion is making history, we have traveled over 3,000 miles in order to bring you the official remarks in connection with the opening. Others, too, have made the long trek to Soldier's Summit. I would say that there are about 300 persons in all gathered around the speaker's stand. They are, for the most part, soldiers and civilian road workers from nearby camps, but, too, there are a good many civic and military dignitaries. As Colonel K.B. Bush of the United States Army Corps of Engineers, who is acting as Master of Ceremonies here today, said in his opening remarks, "We who are gathered here in this imposing wilderness today are but the symbols of the countless thousands who have made this undertaking possible." And what an undertaking it has been. Surely this road will rank for all time among the greatest engineering feats the world has ever seen. From Dawson Creek to Fairbanks in Alaska, a distance of 1,650 miles, American Army engineers have punched through this highway at the blitzkrieg speed of 8 miles a day. The scenery along the highway is unsurpassed in grandeur. The towering Rocky Mountains are on all sides. The mighty rivers of the Northland wind their way along the route. The Liard, the Lewis, and the fabled Yukon. But of all the beauty spots to be found, this opening ceremony is taking place in quite the most arresting. From the Soldier's Summit, we're looking down on the blue-green waters of Lake Kluane, surrounded by the white ramparts of peaks that tower 10,000 feet above us. Kluane waters are too deep to freeze, but they're steaming and smoking in the cold, and the lake glows like an emerald in the setting of gigantic diamonds. It's bitter cold here today. I'm not permitted to quote temperatures, but I can tell you that all of us up here envy all of you by your firesides out there. It's a very colorful scene, nonetheless. On either side of the dividing tape that is symbolic of the Yukon-Alaska border fly the Stars and the Stripes and the Union Jack. On the Canadian side of the line, we have a detachment of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the real soldiers of this frontier land, and on the Alaska side are the American troops standing smartly to attention with their parkas done up and their skis at the present. The official opening ceremony has been going on for some time now, and I'm going to ask Peter Sternberg, who is frozen to a microphone in front of the speaker stand, to come in and describe the proceedings thus far and conduct you through the final scenes.
The ceremony was opened with an invocation by the Reverend Father Charles Hamill of the Sacred Heart Catholic Church at Whitehorse. The Minister of Public Works for Alberta, the Honorable W.A. Fowler, was unable to attend, but a message from Premier Eberhardt was read. J.S. Bright, the District Engineer of the United States Public Roads Administration, has spoken on behalf of the civilian workers and contractors who helped to build the road. Major General G.R. Perks, V.C., who is the man in charge of the defense of Canada's Pacific Coast, has also said a few words. After the official speeches are over, a ribbon will be cut, and the first convoy of United States Army trucks will roll north along the highway to Fairbanks. Colonel Bush is now introducing the Honorable Ian MacKenzie, Canadian Minister of Health, who represents Prime Minister Mackenzie King at the ceremony.
Long after this war has been won, the Alcan Highway will be an enduring tie between the United States and Canada. The governments of the two countries have worked jointly and in harmony in the furtherance of this undertaking. The Canadian government has honored the project on this day of its opening by sending from Ottawa a member of the Prime Minister's Cabinet, the Honorable Ian MacKenzie, Minister of National Health and Pensions, has a close and intent interest in this road. For nearly 800 miles, the Alcan Highway threads through British Columbia, and Mr. MacKenzie has the distinction of representing Vancouver, largest city of that province in Canada's Parliament. Mr. MacKenzie is well known to us. During the First World War, he made an illustrious record as an officer in the Canadian Army. He is one of the notable figures in the public life of the Dominion. He is with us to deliver a message from the Right Honorable W.L. MacKenzie King, Prime Minister of Canada, I have the honor to introduce the Honorable Ian McKenzie.
Mr. McKenzie. Thank you, sir. I feel honored and privileged to be here today and to participate as a member of and on behalf of the Government of Canada in these historic ceremonies. I bring to you the personal regrets of the Prime Minister, who was looking forward to being here, and of my colleague, the Honorable Mr. Creer, who had greatly hoped to be here. He was to have been ably represented here this morning by Dr. Campbell, who is so well known and so beloved in the Northwest Territories, who knows its history, its problems, and its development better, I believe, than any other Canadian. This is the message from the Prime Minister of Canada on the occasion of the formal opening of the Canada-Alaska Highway. It is my privilege on behalf of the government and people of Canada to congratulate most heartily all those officers and men of the United States Army whose brilliant work and Herculean efforts have made it possible to operate this vitally important highway more than 4 months ahead of schedule. It is deeply gratifying to see this early completion of the great task recommended by the Canada-United States Permanent Joint Board on Defense. Faced with the problem of making the West Coast secure, Canada and the U.S. both saw the need of a series of great military airfields between the continental United States and Alaska, and the need, too, for a military highway connecting these airfields and forming a supply route to Alaska. Thus was born this great joint enterprise to which Canada contributed the development of the airfields while the United States contributed the construction of the Canada-Alaska Highway. It is my firm belief that the Canada-Alaska Highway will be a vital strategic factor in the defense of the United States and Canada and in paving the way to ultimate victory. The builders of the Canada-Alaska Highway have made an enduring contribution to the well-being of both our nations. Signed, W.L. Mackenzie King, Ottawa, November of 1942. And now, with your permission, a word or two of my own. Standing as we stand here today, practically upon the frontier, we are proud to recall the remarks that were made in certain of the very fine messages read to us this afternoon. Our two nations have never known any bastions or any of the emplacements of war upon their frontiers. The only bastions we know are those of goodwill and those of the good neighbor. As one of our former prime ministers of British Columbia so well expressed it, with the gates always open and the highways clear, we shall continue a policy of peace and goodwill between our two nations. I desire to express the admiration of the government of Canada to the American Corps of Engineers for one of the greatest engineering marvels in the whole world. Carry on that splendid work. This road is built for war, but this road will be used when peace and victory come back to us again. This road will again be used for the great purposes of reconstruction and of peace. The soil is ours, the toil was yours. And we helped in constructing facilities for the skyways. And when victory is ours again, the highways clear and the gates open, and friendship continuing to know two nations, why, this will be one of the greatest aviation routes in the history of the world, and the men of this continent will be responsible for one of the most significant factors in reconstruction. So my final word to you this afternoon, because I do not want to detain you too long, the weather is somewhat frigid in these most beautiful surroundings. My final word to you is this: let us dedicate the great, beautiful ideals of our two nations to the great purpose that in the days to come, the highways of honor and the pathways of peace shall lead the two results which will be resounding
with a tremendous value to the glory of God and to the triumph of great causes.
A few weeks ago, the commanding general and staff of the Northwest Service Command had the pleasure of being host to Governor Ernest H. Greening of Alaska. We are sure that the friendly contact there established with the government of Alaska through him will be of immense benefit. The governor, now in Washington on urgent business, is represented today by the Honorable E. L. Bartlett, Secretary of State and Acting Governor of Alaska. Mr. Bartlett, or Bob, as he is known to thousands of Alaskans, is a native son of Alaska who, for many years, has played a conspicuous part in the affairs of the territory. We are glad that he and his party could come here today to be with us in this impressive wilderness setting. Mr. Bartlett will speak for the territory, and he brings a message from the governor. He also will present, on behalf of the Alaskan chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution, an official flag of the territory. This flag comes as a gift from Mrs. Donald MacDonald of Fairbanks, whose husband, for many years, advocated the construction of a road to Alaska. I take pleasure in presenting to you the Honorable E.R. Bartlett.
It is a great personal honor for me to be present at the opening of the Alcan Highway. Alaska has been my home since 1905, and I have vivid memories of the laborious means of transportation upon which we formerly had to rely. One by one have come changes in the way of progress until now we have this epical road, providing a true continental link. As acting governor of the territory of Alaska, it gives me the utmost pleasure to bring to you the greetings and thanks of those across the border. We salute General O'Connor and his gallant officers and men for a big job well done. We pay our respects to the men of the Public Roads Administration who are part of this great undertaking. I bring from Alaska to our Canadian neighbors our warmest salutations. It speaks well for the comity of our countries that we have united in an effective partnership, which in the space of a few short months has made possible the completion of one of the greatest engineering tasks of all time. This could not have been done had not each side in this grand adventure reposed complete trust and confidence in the other. This highway, traversing land over which flies the Union Jack and land over which flies the Stars and Stripes, will make our bond of kinship even closer. It gives me pleasure now to read a greeting from Governor Greening. Brigadier General J.O. Connor, Northwest Service Command, Whitehorse, Yukon Territory. Dear General O'Connor, I regret very much my inability to be present at the ceremony opening the Alaskan Highway, but official business in Washington, D.C. dictates otherwise. However, I recall with pleasure my recent visit with you and members of your staff in Whitehorse and the opportunity which that visit gave me to inspect the highway and other undertakings of your command. The dedication of the first land route in history to Alaska is an event of great significance. For years, many of us have advocated such a project. Its successful completion will mean a great deal to our entire continent, not only now in a time of military peril, but in the days of peace which are to come. Together with other routes, either under construction or in prospect, this highway will make it possible for military supplies to be transported to Alaska with greater speed and more continuity than ever before. As Governor of Alaska, I congratulate the men, soldiers, and civilians who have worked on this highway. On behalf of the people of the territory, I thank them for the wholehearted effort and unselfish labor which have made possible the Alcan Highway. I wish also to express appreciation to our allies, neighbors of Canada, on whose soil much of the road has been constructed. Many of the people of Alaska hope that this highway will be augmented by other routes in the comparatively near future. If the same skill and devotion are put into these additional routes, I am sure that the territory will soon be connected with continental United States by a complete and magnificent transportation system, which should, in my view, at the earliest moment, be extended to the Bering Sea. With renewed assurances of my appreciation of your work and undertakings, I am very cordially yours, Ernest Greening, Governor of Alaska. And now, in conclusion, I am privileged to present an Alaskan flag to the organization responsible for this mighty achievement. This flag is a gift of the Alaskan chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution and is here today through the courtesy and generosity of Mrs. Donald McDonald of Fairbanks. Through you, Colonel Bush, I present this flag to the Commanding General of the Northwest Service Command. I am sure that you share with me appreciation of this splendid gesture. All Alaskans will be proud to know that this gift from the Daughters of the American Revolution will be a part of the heraldry of the Northwest Service Command.
Mr. Bartlett is now handing the flag of Alaska over to Colonel Bush, who is receiving it on behalf of the Commanding General. The flag has a blue ground with the North Star and the seven stars of the Great Dipper in gold on it.
On behalf of the Commanding General Northwest Service Command, this emblem of the Territory of Alaska, as a token from the Alaska chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution. Brigadier General James A. O'Connor, United States Army, Commanding General of the Northwest Service Command, will respond on behalf of the organization charged with the construction, maintenance, and operation of this great international highway. General O'Connor.
Greetings to the friends. We are witnessing the breakthrough of the road joining the United States, Canada, and Alaska. This road is a bond, a tie, the possibilities and extent of which we cannot now foresee. This is the final breakthrough of the road. It is also the end of the pioneering, the romance of the pioneering of the road. It has been a real experience for those engaged in it. In this pioneering adventure, we've had the unity of action of the American government, the Canadian government, the American-Canadian Army, the Public Roads Administration of the United States, Canadian contractors, American contractors, and anybody else within range, Canadian or American, who could give a helping hand. What has impressed me most has been the all-out, go-ahead spirit of the individuals, soldiers, contractors, civilians, soldiers all, I like to call them the soldiers of the highway, who have been breaking the trail. There are many who have labeled the task impossible in the time allowed. This has turned out to be simply a challenge and an inspiration for the workers on the job, Canadian and American, to go ahead and do it. The task has taxed our capacity and ingenuity, but it has been accomplished, and it has been a pleasure in accomplishing it. The Alcan Highway, as we call it, is truly a joint effort of our two nations. The name we have given it symbolizes that. It combines the first syllables of Alaska and Canada. No designation could be more appropriate. The greater part of the highway is in the Dominion of Canada. Of its 1,600 miles length, approximately 1,200 miles thread through the magnificent forests and uplands of our sister nation of the Western Hemisphere. Through the courtesy of the Canadian government and people, American troops and workmen have been privileged to help build this road on Canadian soil. Many of them have lived in Canadian settlements and towns. All of them have eaten the products of Canadian farms. They have camped beneath Canadian spruces and pines, have forded Canadian rivers and sunk wells in Canadian sod. And we have been accorded the high honor and distinction of flying our flag within Canadian provinces and territories. This highway, stretching from Dawson Creek on the British Columbia, Alberta line to Fairbanks in the core of Alaska, is a real and unique tie between our countries. It is unfortunate, but not unusual in history, that it takes this serious time of peril for nations to get together in projects of this magnitude. This project was born in the hour of peril and produced for military purposes. This is one of the sparks from the blow struck on December 7th, a spark that is serving to weld together Canada and the United States, which with other sparks is extending the same unity throughout this hemisphere. The highway to Alaska, the Alcan Highway, is a token of the spirit and determination of our peoples to be their own master and not others' slaves. A rosy picture can be painted for this highway after this war is over. For those who have become acquainted with the land through which the highway passes, with its forests, rivers, mountains, plateaus, words alone are not impressive. A little imagination can readily paint a picture of a new empire for those who will follow us, a new empire for them to build and enjoy. The history of this section of the Dominion is new to me, new and entrancing. I am now reading, when at odd moments, a handwritten diary about the men of the Western Union Telegraph Expedition, men led by Colonel Charles S. Buckley of the United States Army Engineers, who threaded through British Columbia solitude and over into Siberia when they were projecting the telegraph to Moscow in 1868. There were the gold seekers who crossed the icy passes of the Yukon three decades later, the bull farmers who first plowed the northwestern Canadian plains, the trappers who explored the magnificent Caribou region, and back a little further, Alexander Mackenzie and Fraser and others whose feats of exploration in Canada match, rival, and surpass the deeds of our main American explorers. Knowledge of this noble past makes us of the American Army more proud than ever that we have been privileged to build the Alcan Highway on Canadian ground. There will shortly be a future when the American soldiers and others who have worked on this road will have resumed their places in the peaceful civilian life of their country. For those who have had a share in its construction, the Alcan Highway will be an indelible memory, a memory in which, as the years go by, they can take justifiable pride and satisfaction. As the tales grow longer and bigger, the highway can well become a saga and an undertaking of historic magnitude. For the benefit of their families and friends and listeners, I know that the boys have well earned the right to be proud, and I count myself lucky to be one of them. As I conclude, I want to express my appreciation to the men who have traveled many miles to be here with us today in this dedication ceremony at Soldier Summit. We are honored by the attendance of Mr. McKenzie, Dr. Kamsel, General Perks, General Ganong, Mr. Bartlett, and many others. Their presence is a symbol of the bond between the United States and Canada, between soldier and civilian, in the prosecution of the war. I also want to thank the many communities as far apart as Fairbanks, Alaska, and Great Falls, Montana, whose people desire to be with us, but were prevented from doing so by our very limited facilities. The goodwill of these men and women is appreciated by all of us connected with this undertaking. On behalf of the soldiers, the contractors, and the civilians of the United States who have worked on the Alcan Highway, I formally thank the government and people of the Dominion of Canada for the cooperation and friendship which has made our task possible. Through all the distant generations to come, I pray that this road will be an unbreakable bond of understanding between our lands. It is truly a symbol that we are good neighbors for all time. Thank you.
I have in my hands a pair of scissors, specially engraved for this historic occasion. On each blade, in plates of genuine Alaskan gold, has been inscribed, Dedication, Alcan International Highway, November 20, 1942.
After the conclusion of this ceremony, the blades of the scissors will be parted. One blade will be sent to President Franklin D. Roosevelt for the National Archives of the United States, the other to Prime Minister King for the National Archives of Canada. Mr. McKenzie and Mr. Bartlett, as representatives of the two vast lands linked permanently together by this road, will now cut the ribbon which symbolizes the opening of the Alcan Highway.
Mr. McKenzie and Mr. Bartlett are stepping over to the red, white, and blue ribbon which is stretched across the highway just in front of the speaker's stand. The ends of the ribbon are held by four of the American soldiers who built the highway. They are Sergeant Major Sharp, a Negro soldier, and Private Alfred Jalufka of Kennedy, Texas, who are from the northern sector of the road, and Master Sergeant Andrew E. Doyle of Philadelphia and Corporal John T. Riley of Detroit, another Negro sector, representing the southern end of the road. As a matter of fact, Private Alfred Jalufka is the man who completed the road. He knocked down the last tree in... They've cut the ribbon. The Alaska-Canada Highway is now officially open.
The signal has been given from the speaker stand for the huge trucks to start rolling down the steep incline behind us here, past the boundary line, and roar on to Fairbanks. The first convoy to push through. Here they come now, and as they pass our truck here, I'll let you hear them. And there they go, roaring off into the snowy distance. The first convoy of Fairbanks freight, symbolic of the hundreds of thousands that will follow along this trail, carrying to the strategic bases of Alaska the weapons of war that will surely smash our enemies in the Pacific. This broadcast from the official opening of the Alcan Road originated at Soldiers Summit near the international border and was recorded by the CBC's Features Department. The broadcast was heard by listeners in the United States through the Mutual Network. The program was relayed to you from Edmonton. Frank Willis speaking. This is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
The next tape is the Alaska Highway, a drama documentary written by Rusty Earlham from the White Horse Star and White Horse. It's 15 minutes and 20 seconds long.
On April 1st, 1964, at a point just south of the traffic circle in Upper White Horse, the control of the Alaska Highway was turned over from the Canadian Army's Northwest Highway System to the Federal Department of Public Works. The ceremony took place at the same spot where in April, 18 years ago, the Canadian Army assumed control from the American Army. Thus a chapter in the story of this remarkable road came to an end, and another has begun. But the story of the Alaska Highway is much older than this. It began on September 4th in 1897, when Inspector J.D. Moody of the Northwest Mounted Police, three constables with their Indian guides, set out from Edmonton to blaze a trail from Fort St. John north to the Klondike. They were under orders to compile a glossary of information on the best routes to follow across the Rockies and through northern British Columbia to the gold fields.
Inspector Moody and his men hacked their way through the wilderness, paddling, climbing, wading, and trudging. Their clothes in tatters, their horses half dead, their packers constantly deserting them, and their constitutions weakened by illness. In one instance, Moody and his men had to chop their way through 300 miles of fallen timber. At another point, a forest fire almost wiped them out, and only an 11th hour change of wind saved them from roasting to death. One of their guides went mad and vanished into the forest. Snow threatened to halt them for a full winter, but Moody fought on through the drifted mountain passes, killing his pack horses to feed his sled dogs. He was out of touch with the world for months, but eventually he crossed the mountains and reached the Pelly River. When he finally arrived at Fort Selkirk, at the junction of the Pelly and Yukon Rivers, he was 1,600 miles north of Edmonton and had been on the move for 14 months. He reported that this Peace River route to the north was completely impossible.
The great gold rush to the Klondike continued. The Canadian government in 1905 decided to build an all-Canadian route along Moody's Old Trail, 750 miles from the Peace River to Teslin Lake. Superintendent Constantine, the first mounted policeman to enter the Yukon Valley, was placed in charge of the Athabasca District after leaving the Klondike, and to him was handed the monumental task. The expedition consisted of 30 men and 60 horses. The road was to be 8 feet wide and with a rest house every 30 miles. It was to be built with all speed. Constantine and his men set about the job, bridging bogs and rivers, hacking through the forest, and constructing the rest stations. After 3 years and 350 miles, the government abandoned the project, and the road was later to be called the Road to Nowhere.
In the United States Congress, Donald MacDonald of the Alaska Road Commission started a one-man campaign for a highway that would eventually reach from Panama to the Polar Sea. Time after time, he spoke.
Mr. Speaker, my predecessor and I, ever since the turn of the century, have brought before this Congress of the United States of America the matter of an overland route from Seattle to Fairbanks. I don't have to remind you, sir, that Alaska is a storehouse of treasures. The value of this northern domain has been stated by men of public prominence with a fervor and conviction that can only come from men who have seen the riches in this land. For 20 years, this story, this plea, has been made for a road. A road that will carry the raw riches of Alaska in the north to the factories of the United States in the south. But still, now, in 1928, we find the road for which we are fighting still subject to doubting questions and a colossal lack of interest.
For 26 years, he would not be silenced. With prophetic vision, he foresaw the possible military advantages of such a road. And in 1939, just 18 months before Pearl Harbor, he said,
I don't know who taught people to place all their reliance on Pearl Harbor, but I do know that this blind faith is not shared in Alaska. We can't afford to let Alaska remain a naval liability, which is exactly what she will be as long as she has no overland connection with the state.
But no one would listen, for the war had started in Europe. Then in December 1941, MacDonald's prophecy came true. North America was shocked when Pearl Harbor was attacked, and Japanese troops invaded the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. MacDonald's warning, voiced over 26 years and ignored, was now transformed into hurried action to make up for lost time. A highway to Alaska must be built. Within hours, a decision was reached. And on the 14th of February, 1942, a directive was issued by President Roosevelt to commence construction of a highway to Alaska.
The Pioneer Road to Alaska will be pushed to completion with all speed within the physical capacity of the troops. The object is to complete the entire route at the earliest possible practical date to a standard sufficient only for the supply of troops.
With these orders, United States engineers started work on the Alaska Highway. It was March 1942. By land, sea, and air, men and materials flowed north. The dreams of Canadians Moody and Constantine and the great Alaskan MacDonald were dreams no more. The highway was being built, not with a handful of men and a few horses, but with thousands of men and machines.
The existing chain of airports from Edmonton to Fairbanks dictated the highway route, and construction was started simultaneously at White Horse, Yukon, Dawson Creek, British Columbia, and Big Delta, Alaska. Pipelines for vitally needed petroleum products were started. The United States Army threw 7 engineering battalions and gigantic amounts of road-building equipment into the project. All 3 points, White Horse, Big Delta, and Dawson Creek, grew overnight from small villages to buzzing construction centers.
For 9 months and 11 days, the engineer regiments and civilian contractors worked in wilderness isolation to link together the various sections. Words alone cannot convey the immensity of the task. The entire highway stretches 1,520 miles northwest from Dawson Creek to Fairbanks, following in many instances the old trails of the Klondikers and fur traders, through a wilderness of mountains, forests, and waterways. Uphill and down dale, winding through narrow canyons, crossing mountains, through swamps and muskeg. 10,000 men helped to build it, but men alone could not have built the highway.
The builders say it was the bulldozers, prodigious earth movers, which turned the trick. But it was, of course, the men and machines, and concentrated effort on a grand scale that did it. The road builders had a special hatred of the northern permafrost. They cleared off the tundra in places in order to lay a firm roadbed, and then, in the summer, the permafrost melted into bog holes, hundreds of feet deep at times, which had to be filled with rock and dirt, or trees if nothing else was handy, to get a firm roadbed. The filling took a long time. The work was deceptive. Sometimes the roadbed seemed to be solid. Later, it would sink out of sight as the thawing continued. No one could tell for sure when the subterranean thawing ceased. When possible, the road was built on top of the tundra, and the builders were happier because the permafrost then stayed permanently frozen and provided an adequate roadbed. But there were many places where the matted cover had to be removed.
Permafrost was only one of the problems. Supplying the necessary equipment and the needs of the workers was another. It was one that could not be solved to everyone's satisfaction, especially during the war when there were many shortages. Equipment was in short supply. Repairs were also, and sometimes food and clothing.
The soldiers and civilians showed considerable ingenuity. Some of the temporary machine shops set up along the way forged new parts to repair broken ones when there was no other way to keep going. Cooks learned to spice the chow with berries and an occasional bear steak.
If you talk with an Alcan builder, very likely he will recall the mosquito, the scourge they can't forget. Mosquitoes were everywhere in clouds to attack the cleverest netting and repellent. After a while, the perpetual buzzing and stinging made the men grouchy. But much to their credit, the great majority slogged on despite these difficulties. They were glad when the weather turned cold that fall because it meant the end of the mosquito.
New names became part of the lore of the times, then joined the names of the old gold rush routes. Coal River, Muncho, Watson Lake, Rancheria, Morley, Teslin, Johnson's Crossing, Squanga, Jake's Corner, Champagne, Canyon, Desdiash, Haines Junction, Kluane, Sheep Camp, Destruction Bay, Burwash, Coydern, Siwash Camp, Snag, and the spot that tried men's souls and was considered Siberia, the Donjek. The milepost numbers used originally to designate camps became small communities, 733, 1016, and 1202.
Whitehorse, a tiny community of 300 souls since the gold rush days, suddenly burst at the seams as thousands of men poured into the country over the White Pass route. A dozen trains a day arrived with men and tons of equipment. The airport was hastily enlarged. McRae had a camp of thousands of men. American soldiers were everywhere, and temporary buildings were thrown up to house them. Women were scarce, and it became the practice at dances to charge a couple $1 admission. Men alone were charged $2, and they paid women to attend stag. The gambling games of Ace Away were run wide open. Waitresses considered it a bad day if they didn't make $50 in tips. A syndicate from the States operated a profitable rum-running business from Skagway to Whitehorse, and military police were everywhere. The town was literally American-controlled. It was the most fantastic boom that Whitehorse had ever seen.
In an incredible 9 months and 11 days, the road was completed. 140 feet above Kluane Lake, just 100 miles east of the Alaska-Yukon border, a ceremony was held on November 20th, 1942, commemorating the completion of the great undertaking. The spot was named Soldiers' Summit. There, American soldiers and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police stood side by side to hear Colonel Bush, Chief of Staff of the Northwest Service Command.
All of us who take part in this brief ceremony are merely representative of others. Those here in this imposing wilderness are the symbols of countless others who have made this undertaking a reality.
General J.A. O'Connor spoke of the joint effort of the two nations to build the Alaska Highway, and the Honorable Ian MacKenzie, representing the Canadian government, read a message from Prime Minister Mackenzie King, which said in part,
"The builders of the Canada-Alaska Highway have made an enduring monument to the well-being of both nations. You met all the stern gravity of nature, overcame all the difficulties of crags and creeks, of rivers and mountains, of swamps and muskeg. This indeed is a gigantic triumph of modern engineering science. It is one more great link between our two lands."
And then Ian MacKenzie of Canada and Robert Bartlett of the United States each took one blade of a pair of engraved scissors and snipped a red, white, and blue ribbon. The highway was open. Shortly after, the first truck rolled into Fairbanks, Alaska, having completed the 1,600-mile trip from Dawson Creek.
The United States turned over the Alaska Highway to Canada 6 months after the end of the war, and Canada was confronted with the task of maintaining and improving 1,200 miles of pioneer road. On April 3, 1946, a ceremony took place at milepost 917 on the crest of Two Mile Hill leading out of Whitehorse. There, title to the highway was accepted by Canadian authorities, General McNaughton and Brigadier Walsh. A bulldozer was driven up a ramp by an American, who handed over controls to a Canadian soldier, who drove it away. With this act, the highway and all its installations changed hands. At that time, General McNaughton said,
"So you can see that Canada has assumed her full share of the financial burden of this great project and has repaid the United States for everything deemed to be of permanent value. 2 years ago, Canada paid the United States $77 million, and in addition, she has spent $30 million herself."
The Canadian Army had its work cut out for it. Month after month, year after year, their work went on. Emergency airstrips were built and maintained. New roads were constructed to fan out from the main highway. Temporary bridges were replaced with permanent ones. Nearly 10,000 feet of bridges were constructed. The highway had an endless variety of troubles. Landslides, washouts, icing, dust, glaciers, all combined to plague them. It was no longer a military road alone. Truckers and tourists traveled its length to earn a living or to gaze on the majestic beauty of the Yukon scenery. Road camps grew into communities. The highway was now a busy thoroughfare, and people lived along its right-of-way. The civilian travel in 1946 was a trickle when the trip was a formidable undertaking. Now, the road is improved to the point where nearly 1 million cars used it last year, and the rate has increased annually since 1946.
Now, in 1964, the Army's job is over. The Minister of National Defense, Mr. Paul Hellyer, announced in the House of Commons that the responsibility for the Northwest Highway System would be transferred from the Department of National Defense to the Department of Public Works.
Today, there is more commercial than military significance for the maintenance of the highway, and for this reason, the decision has been made.
And so, once again, the Alaska Highway changes hands. Old-timers and people who have moved into the Yukon since the end of the war are saddened at the thought of losing their Army friends. But the road is there, and where there are roads, people will follow. The Alaska Highway story goes on.
My legs are bent and bold. by and by. It's 918 miles, the road is long and rough. It's 918 miles of gravel.